It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, Brad. Good morning, Jim. Jason is not with us this week. He's not doing well today. And that's unfortunate because the thing I wanted to talk about first was SEC.
Yeah, I'm getting over my illness, so I'm here. But the last couple of days for me have been head cold, chest exploding. Just, you know, now it's just all coming out of me. So I'm kind of on a NyQuil hangover this morning.
Gross.
You got that that traveling crud. Everybody's sick this time of year. You get on an airplane. Nothing makes me sicker than when I fly regularly. My body is constantly fighting off whatever traveling germs. It's like the end of 12 Monkeys or something over there with when the thing's breaking out and the guy's on the plane. That's the way I feel every time I fly. Fortunately, I haven't had to fly in a while.
But yeah, that football game Monday night, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great game. I think both games last weekend were I mean, obviously that Rose Bowl is an instant classic. The way Bama dominated Clemson was pretty crazy. So I'm looking forward to a good game Monday night. I actually think UGA is going to pull it off and win the game Monday night. It's going to be a close one, like 27-24 or something like that.
Since Jason's not here, I'll rep Georgia and say I would agree with you. Watching Georgia claw their way back from what looked like a certain defeat into a double overtime victory was fantastic. So I'm looking forward to Monday night. And as the comic book fan in me is looking forward to the new extended trailer for Black Panther during the game. So it's going to be a win-win.
You damn nerds.
All right. I know most of our listeners probably don't care about the sports talk, so we'll let that go. On to bigger and better things. So what an awful week for computer security. So Meltdown and Spectre appear out of seemingly nowhere. So every computer for the last 20 years is vulnerable to a flaw in most modern CPUs that allow speculative references to probe privileged data. So this is kind of scary, right? And one of the things that's funny, just as an aside, on CNN, when they were talking about it on their front page, they made it look like it was purely an Apple problem. It was just like, Apple computers vulnerable to two horrible exploits. It's like, yeah, every computer is there. Thanks, clickbait.
I guess the scariest thing about it to me is the whole where VMs can read each other's memory and whatnot.
Yeah, as a guy whose business revolves around virtual machines and virtual infrastructure, when I was really digging into this to put it into the show notes, seeing that there were certain situations where processes could read memory that should have been inaccessible, where hypervisors could have VMs that could see the memory on other VMs, going back to the company that I worked for previously, where we were a financial institution, this was a big deal where you'd have certain customers that would want physical isolation on VMware clusters, where it was like, I don't want my web server VMs being on the same physical host as my backend VMs. And we were always go, oh, really? This again? Because, you know, it's they're isolated. You can't get through. It's a complete thing.
And this again. That's funny. Yeah. And then now you're like, oh, crap.
Now
this again.
Walking it back.
It's Mel Gibson in that conspiracy theory movie, right? The tinfoil hats have won. Now there was something to worry about.
I guess what amazes me is nobody's really found this before now. I mean, obviously, there was the post about Google finding it, but how come nobody was able to find it, you know, say 15 years ago or 10 years ago?
Yeah, the NSA most definitely knew about this, right? I'm kidding. But the cloud thing, I think, is the biggest worry here because of that whole shared infrastructure type setup. So I know my company kind of, I wouldn't say they freaked out, but they emailed out and was like, hey, if you still got a laptop with Windows 7 on it, we've decided we're going to completely replace all of those and make sure everybody's on 10 now. Because a lot of people are on 10. One of my coworkers was still on 7, and she said she emailed. They were like, yeah, we didn't realize how many people we still had on 7, so we're a little behind router machines. We just had to order some more, and that was pretty funny.
Yeah, it sounds like a sad day. And you know, the funny thing is, it's not just Intel that's affected. So CPUs from both AMD and ARM are also vulnerable, though I think AMD said that they weren't vulnerable from what I read. They were like, it's not that big a deal. But I don't know. I think we've not seen the last of this. I know that they're saying that if you're running High Sierra or Sierra, the latest versions of both, the latest patch releases, you should be fine. iOS 11.2 and tvOS 11.2 should be patched for both of those. And hey, at least the Apple Watch is not affected. So, you know, there's a bright side somewhere. But Seeing that some OSs report slowdowns as a result of the fix on a magnitude of anywhere between 5% and 30% is just, this is such a big deal. I don't even know how you really mitigate this going long term. I mean, you're going to have to change the way that these kernels read memory. This is going to be weird.
So, I've been trying to keep up with this, but is there actually any exploits in the wild for this yet, or did it come out and they've mitigated some? I mean, have they found actually any exploits in the wild of either one of these yet, or are we crying wolf before it actually shows up?
I thought I read somewhere that Apple said that there are not any exploits in the wild yet.
I thought the Project Zero people definitely had a proof of concept that they could demonstrate where this did work. So this is not beyond the realm of possibility that some independent third party could go ahead and do the same thing on their own. I was almost certain of that, where they did have, I believe that was right, the Project Zero folks over at Google that did it were able to demonstrate that this was an actual vulnerability. And it was the Register that reported it a week early. Everybody was scrambling behind the scenes to get fixes ready, and somebody leaked it a week ahead of time, which caused Microsoft to go into a mad panic and, you know, your Linux vendors to go out and try to put something together. So this was not good.
That's just funny. Linux vendors and Microsoft's in a panic, and Apple says, we're fine.
Hey, sometimes proprietary must be good.
No kidding. Yeah. I mean, I know when it hit, I was a little confused. You know, I'm like, so it's the actual hardware that has the issue, and, you know, read more into it. And there were a couple of good articles that I saw that tried to bring it down into, you know, kind of a layman's terms of what was going on. And that's why, you know, now I'm just like, this is, you know, is this where the machines take over, or like people controlling the machines take over everybody else? I mean, this is everybody everywhere. This is crazy.
It is rare to see something that it's this far reaching across this many architectures, because Intel was getting kicked under the bus pretty hard, and they had to issue a statement saying, hey, it's not just us, right? This is the way that this is handled. This is a common CPU architecture. This is not something that we've done specifically. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And it's going to be weird to see how the vendors respond to this and how our operating systems are going to change as a result. But I think everybody should be real nervous about this. This is bad.
Maybe this will speed up Apple having their own chips running Mac OS.
Let's see what else is going on this week. So Apple's $29 battery replacement program, it's being reported that it could lead to 16 million fewer iPhones sold in 2018. And I got to call BS on this. This seems very, very dubious to me. I mean, this is honestly something that people, we've already established, you're not running into the situation where you're at this peak performance situation where you're seeing these arbitrary slowdowns. You know, if your slowdowns are happening as a result of, hey, I've got a new version of an OS on a phone that wasn't designed to run it, a new battery is not going to help you out.
But it couldn't necessarily not be the slowdowns. It could just be my battery only lasts 4 hours at work instead of eight. And so if somebody goes and gets their battery replaced and it lasts them all day instead of just half a day, then there'll be a lot of people who are so damn cheap that they're not going to go replace their phone because it does what they want to and it lasts them all day.
That's not the first thing I think about, though, if my phone seems slow, is, oh, I need to go get a new phone.
Yeah, what a country we live in if that's the problem that we're having. Hey, my car seems a little off. I'm going to go throw it away and get a new car. I mean,
I need a new roof. I just need to go buy a new house.
But I'm saying it's not necessarily the slowdown that's causing people to go buy new phones. It's that their battery doesn't last as long as it used to. And so now if they can get that battery replaced for $29 instead of basically most people don't think to go get their battery replaced before when it was, what, $79 or $99 or whatever the price was. They went and got a new phone. But if they can spend $29 and get a new battery, then I can see where some people would do that versus going getting a new phone. It's not necessarily the slowdown. It's just that their battery doesn't last them as long as they think it should. And so if they can do this, that mitigates the actual problem here, not the slowdown.
Which is another reason why bringing it to press at all sort of caused a mini panic in people, you know, oh, my phone's not as good as I thought it should be. So everybody's going to run to the Apple store to get new batteries.
There's like 23 class action lawsuits against Apple right now, too. It's so ridiculous. My own experience with this, my sister-in-law and my nephew are in town. And we were in downtown Atlanta yesterday, and they don't have an Apple store that's close to them in Cincinnati. I guess they live a little ways from the closest one. So they thought, hey, we have some downtime. Let's pop into the Apple store across the street from the hotel and get our batteries replaced. So we go in there and it's like, yeah, we don't have any batteries here. So we're going to have to put you on a list, and when it's available, we'll send you one. You know, we'll let you know to come to the Apple store and they'll do it. So that was kind of funny to, and I think you're going to see that a lot where there's going to be such a mad rush of people doing it for the cheap batteries. I mean, $29 to get your battery replaced if you don't have Apple Care is a pretty good deal. It's actually a great deal. So it's going to be a rush of this stuff. You're not going to get these batteries in either. All they have to do is delay it past September and then they won't have any impact on sales.
Well, the price is on par with when you actually could replace the battery in your phone, like if you had a Nokia phone, you know, 15 years ago.
It's like an airbag replacement in your car. It's not like they just have those at the dealership. You've got to like let them know, hey, I'm going to come in and like,
make an appointment.
Make an appointment and we'll get the parts you need and you come in and we'll do your fix your recall, you know, but it's not like you can just show up and get that fixed.
Indeed. And of course, there's going to be a rush on it anyway, so people are going to be just clamoring to get this done anyway. I'm going to link in the show notes to a thing called Here's Why Your Gadgets Get Slower Over Time from Engadget, which is a great read and puts, you know, a common sense look at why your gadgets slow down over time. It's not Apple killing your device necessarily. It's, as we discussed before, an operating system that wasn't designed probably for, you know, a piece of hardware two generations back. So a good common sense read. Everyone should know this. Anyone listening to this probably already knows that anyway. Feel free to disseminate it and share it with people that are in a panic. That'll be a nice thing. So a new technology we had talked about earlier this year has just gotten its certification from the FCC. It's called Energys is the name of the company. The technology that they're doing is called WattUp, WATTUP, which I thought was a pretty good name. And this is actual wireless charging. This isn't inductive charging. This is wire-free charging technology. So it's been about 3 years, and it's taken them that long to get the FCC certification for this. And it's the first time the FCC has ever certified technology like this, but your actual power is transmitted over radio frequency and their system converts that RF into battery power. So that seems really cool. And CES is coming up this week, and hopefully they're going to be able to demo this or have some sort of consumer-facing product. But just imagine having some base station that sits in your house transmitting power. All of your devices, regardless of where they are, receive it. I think it's going to be pretty transformative. What do you guys think?
Ooh, imagine the cancer.
I don't think your argument at, you know, or your speculation there would be any worse than it is already. You know, we've already got tons of radio waves shooting around. I mean, stand out in the sun, you're getting shot with radio waves.
We are bathed in it constantly.
Exactly.
I know. I'm joking because it's like if they're strong enough to charge my devices just like in the ambient air, just like it just like my device just starts getting power because it's in this room. That just seems crazy.
Everyone laughed when they said that a hypervisor couldn't be breached and have VMs read data between the two, and now we're saying that the radio waves are going to charge us up. That tinfoil hat conspiracy is looking better and better. You just watch. This will be the next thing.
2018's looking wild, guys.
No, this is really cool. I've been waiting for this for so long, and I knew that this... I remember reading about this company. It was even speculated that Apple was going to buy them or Apple was going to license their technology or whatever, but this is really cool to never... I mean, you think about this. You could put this in like a stadium or a concert hall or something, and your phone just stays charged. Like you could just put these strategically in public places, and your phone could always just be charging up. That's awesome.
Somebody's going to figure out a way to put a paywall in front of it, so when you walk into, you know, whatever place that sells coffee or whatever, there'll be a paywall for the internet and a paywall for the wireless charging.
Possibly.
This just sounds really crazy to me, but you know, I obviously I'm all for it. We'll see. Well, I guess we'll just have to see how it goes. I'm one of those tinfoil hat guys on this one, I guess.
What? All right. It's not like you're sitting next to, you're sitting underneath a power line. I mean, we're converting radio frequency into battery power. So I'm sure it's no worse than they said. They even describe it in the article that I'm linking to, that it's similar in concept to the way Wi-Fi works, right? The signal is there. They interpret it and do something with it on their side to make sure that it gets converted into power. So they're not, I mean, air is not a good conductor. They're not shooting power through the air. Yeah. I don't know.
I know. I mean, it sounds to me like, you know, somebody's like trying to create a perpetual motion machine where basically they're creating energy where none exists. That sort of thing is what's crazy about this.
So today's consumer would go and buy like an additional case, sort of like they have for the inductive charging. It's just that case would have an antenna in it to receive that radio signal and then shoot it into your lightning port or whatever. And then, you know, next generation phone would have the antenna built into the device.
That, yeah, okay, that makes a little more sense if it starts with cases and then goes from there where they could put it in the device. I mean, you know, I'm all for it. I mean, come on, let's charge our Teslas the same way, right?
I mean, that's a good implication as well there. I mean, again, doing these things is never going to be fast as plugging directly into something, as we've seen even with inductive charging. But if you're getting a steady stream of power, a steady trickle of power, I think the cumulative effect would be really, really good. So I'm really excited about that.
I mean, sort of a sideways analog would be a car that is charged by solar. So as it drives down the road, it has solar panels on the top of it, and waves are shooting into the solar panels as you drive down the road.
I'm kind of shocked we don't have that already.
I think it's because the conversion of the light into battery power, it's not an efficient process. So that's the issue. Because I think this has come up before, where it's like, why don't we just put the battery cells on the roof of the car? The car is out in the sun all day. But again, those cells aren't very efficient. They have to be facing the sun in a certain perspective. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of problems with that technology. It's not as good as we would wish it was.
Can we build a turbine on top of my car? No, I'm kidding.
It's like when you had that Mini Cooper, Jim, and you would sometimes see the Mini Coopers with the fake wind-up key on the back, you know, so as you drive, it turns.
Yeah,
it'd be something really similar, a turbine similar to that.
No, I was wearing the tinfoil hat, but I agree. It sounds really cool. It sounds like something where if it does really work, Brian, you're absolutely right. Apple should snap this right up, or somebody's going to. I mean, this is next-gen level stuff. I mean, even if it's just barely charging, if it's something where you could just set something up in your house that does this, I can see that as a big seller. Or at the office, you know, put one in your office just where everybody in the office gets. And I guess, I mean, it does seem sort of where I was saying you're creating energy out of none. Like, how much power do you have to put in a device like this where it creates your radio signals to charge 100 phones in the same room? I mean, are you getting more power out of that than you're putting in it? That's the way I look at it. Is it seems to me like you're generating more power on 100 devices in the room. I mean, does it get lower with less devices in the room? Or I mean, if it's one device, is it this much? If it's two devices, it's a little less. Three. You understand what I'm saying? It seems to me.
Well, essentially, that's the way Wi-Fi works, too, you know, and then if you're talking about getting into it, what you get out of it, I mean, if you're thinking of the idea of like a power transformer where you say you have 110 volts coming out of the wall and you use a step-down transformer like a wall wart to charge your phone, you're stepping it down to 5 volts, and in on the inverse, you could also step it up.
Right. I mean, I'm just saying it seems to crazy to me that you know, you would plug in some device that released a radio signal and that 100 devices in a room could charge off that. I mean, there's got to be a diminishing returns there, right? Like you said, Brad, like Wi-Fi. I mean, it's every device you add, the signal's less for the devices that you add. So I'm sorry if I confused that, but
I think we'll be watching what comes out of CES this week with great anticipation to see what they announce exactly. But it's definitely a company to keep your eye on, just because I think this is going to be the next big thing. Apple would be crazy not to buy them up.
What up? Yeah, I do like that name.
What up?
The other thing I kind of like is the idea of, say, you're going to have a conference, like go into a conference room and you've got a large conference table and everybody's in there got a laptop, and instead of somebody's on, say, 3 or 4% and they need to take notes, instead of lugging their power connector in there and trying to find trying to sit somewhere at the table where they can reach an outlet so they can charge their laptop while they're taking notes, they could just, you know, come in and use what's available in that room based on the radio signal.
I like to think of places like, you know, big public outdoor places or like stadiums and that type of thing, where you have a concentration of people all together. You know, the conference I was at yesterday with my nephew, that video game conference, you're all in a crowded auditorium. You can't get a signal. Your phone is draining at a very fast clip because it's constantly searching. It can't get a signal. If they're too cheap to provide Wi-Fi, maybe they could put something in there that would at least keep your phone from dying, so that when you left the venue, the phone that you weren't able to use while you're in the room wasn't dead. That would be nice.
But wouldn't that work the same way? I mean, the reason nobody could get signal is because there was too many people trying to use the radio waves that are there. So you're going to end up with the same exact thing for the power charging, where if there's too many people there trying to receive those signals, then, I mean, it's basically the same concept, right?
Possibly.
It's akin to that Pokemon Go meetup they had in Chicago or whatever it was, where everybody was supposed to be able to get these rare Pokemons, and then nobody was able to get on the network. So it'd be the same thing, like if you're trying to say in Brian's example, you know, try to provide power like to everyone's device in the stadium at say the Super Bowl, and then like the grid goes down as a result of everybody trying to sap those
just those four charging sprint people. Just those four sprint people are the only people that are able to do anything.
Do I just see like the lights going out at the football game while everybody's trying to charge their device?
It would be kind of funny. But again, it's all speculation until we know more. So there's a new app called Minicast that dropped this week, and it allows you to play podcasts on your watch. Did you guys get a chance to see the article that I linked to for that?
Yeah, I looked at it. I downloaded it. I sent the example serial podcast episode that it comes with, and I listened to it through my headphones on my watch, and it worked. I haven't bought the $2.99 or $3.99 upgrade that you have to buy to integrate it into the share sheets with the third-party podcast apps, but it's so far the concept is cool.
Yeah, I looked at the article. I haven't downloaded it because I didn't necessarily think it'd be something that I would use that often. I mean, I generally always have my phone. I can see the application of like if you're at the gym or something and you wanted to leave your phone behind in the locker or whatever and just play from your watch, that would be super useful. So I think it's a great implementation here of, you know, if somebody won't make it to where their app does it correctly, just kind of offload it onto another third party app that handles the playback, you know.
So I know that using Apple Music, you can tell the watch to sync the music. Now, I don't know if it's actually copying the music over to the watch or if it's just syncing up your playlist and still going to stream it over LTE or Wi-Fi, whatever you're connected to, and send it to the watch to be played through your Bluetooth headphones. But sending this in the same analog, if you will, the sending of the one podcast to my watch seemed pretty slow, and I don't remember if it was sending it over Wi-Fi or over Bluetooth.
No, it's sending it over Bluetooth. I mean, all of the stuff with the Apple Watch seems to happen. The majority of it, it feels like, happens over Bluetooth. Either that or it's just really, really slow otherwise. But I think it's all doing that over Bluetooth is the problem. Why every interaction with that watch seems so slow is that it seems like it wants to do everything over Bluetooth first if that's available.
And what I was getting at was, say you were going to go to the gym and you were going to go and work out for an hour, you wouldn't be able to just pull up in the parking lot and do it. And, you know, because you're going to be out there for 15 minutes sitting in the car waiting for your podcast to sync before you can leave your car and leave your phone in the car to go in and just use the watch.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about that. So it still has that you got to plan ahead aspect to it.
So yeah, and just for our listeners that may not have heard of this, it's a companion app to Pocket Cast, Overcast, Castro, or Apple Podcast. So it's not meant to replace your podcast client. It's meant as a supplement. And there's a post on Medium that we'll link to as well. There's a lot of limitations in watchOS that makes this sort of problematic. And the download progress doesn't update when you're doing this. There's no playback progress for the save state. So if you stop it in the middle, you go back, it's going to start over from the very beginning. There's no 30-second forward or rewind buttons, and you can't change the volume. But if you go to the now playing screen, you can sort of address this. But there's a lot of limitations in watchOS. And again, this was when Marco Arment dropped it from Overcast when it was a feature in there. So my comparison is this is like compare watchOS to iOS. Remember when we were so excited when we got cut and paste? Well, we haven't gotten the equivalent of cut and paste for watchOS yet. Like some of the maturity is just not there. They're very conservative when they make a new OS, and they will slowly add in features. And even though we're on the fourth iteration of this, it really feels kind of more like the second or third, because watchOS 1 felt like sort of like a beta.
We were beta testing that. Yeah, totally.
We certainly were. It was nigh unusable.
And there's no reason why they can't, you know, make it to where you could put fat data like audio or I guess audio podcasts or music on your watch, because it has 16 gigs of storage. I mean, that's plenty to get on, you know.
It's it's all about battery life, man. I mean, if you think about it, we just now got the ability to stream music, and only through Apple Music on the watch. And if you read some of the articles out there from the folks who have done it, it takes a pretty significant hit, just the streaming of music. So, and that it'll still try to use the phone if the phone's present. So it's all battery life.
I was thinking, you know, like that first version of the Apple Watch, it was truly just a watch. It was like, you got time, and it just kind of, it showed you the time when you raised your wrist. And if you try to do anything else with it, yeah, you were going to stand there and look dumb because it was going to take a while when you started clicking.
It was essentially a watch and a pedometer.
It was a watch, yeah.
With notifications. WatchOS 1 was one of the shortest-lived OSs that Apple's ever released, if you think about it, because it came out in April of 2015, and WatchOS 2 was out by September of 2015. So WatchOS 1 wasn't around very long. WatchOS 2 felt like WatchOS 1, if we're going to be honest.
And I remember, you know, specifically Marco, because he's, you know, vocal, and you see the stuff he posts, you know, complaining about basically not being able to do this or not being able to do that, or this is slow or that's slow. I mean, just the inability to do the things that needed to be done with, you know, on the OS side for apps just wasn't there. And then they finally got true native apps for the watch. And, you know, I think they've finally made it to where those older apps can't be upgraded anymore, right? Or can't get installed on the phone. Like the original Apple Watch apps have to be replaced now with the.
Since I'm always running the latest and greatest, I have no idea if that's actually
actual
the case.
Apps. Yeah, I think they've done that where you've finally got to go to the native app now instead of used to be like a web app sort of interface when it first started or something.
I think the frustration is we've never had an Apple device that's been this limited in resources, this resource constrained, I guess. And that's what made them make such conservative choices. But you have to think that a podcast client for the watch natively will be coming. You have to.
It's a little tiny thing on my wrist. Make it do everything.
Yes, we want it to replace our phone. So it looks like Apple is getting Siri ready for the HomePod. They've added a news brief command in the new beta of iOS. Jim, you use your news briefing a lot. You do too, right, Brad?
I don't use the news brief, but I know that Jim does.
Yeah, I like the news brief on my Alexa, on my Echo. So I can see where that would definitely be useful with Siri, because I like it in the mornings when I get up. It's one of the first things I do when I'm home is listen to that. And then on the road, I generally just start up the Up First podcast from NPR, because that's like the first thing in my news brief is Up First. Well,
shout out to Up First. I love that.
Yeah, it's weather and then Up First, and then I've got a bunch of other stuff that comes behind it. But Up First is a great podcast out there. If you're not listening, it's usually no more than 15 minutes. They try to keep an even keeled slant on the news. You know, obviously it's NPR. If they're going to lean anyway, it's going to be a little bit liberal. For me, it's really good. I can keep up with domestic news and issues. But the thing Up First really does for me is, you know, if something's going on in Pakistan or something's going on in Jerusalem or somewhere, you know, they bring somebody on who's on the ground there, and they try to explain things at a level that if you're not, you know, all up to speed on foreign affairs, you can still kind of understand what's going on. And so I really enjoy that podcast. So shout out to the Up First.
So it looks like this week Amazon released a new developer kit for the Echo, and it looks like it's going to be able to end up in headphones and smartwatches before too long, and this is very exciting to me. I don't know why, but I like the idea of a pair of over-the-ear headphones that are kind of like the noise-canceling Sonys we have that have an assistant built into them that I could interface with. I don't know why I didn't really think about that, but I want to see something. That would be a great way, if you're not going to be able to be successful in the phone market like Amazon has not been able to sort of do an end run around this and put it in some of those devices that are with you a lot of the time. What do you guys think?
I hope they can make it, you know, it can work, because if you recall, Jason was saying he bought a couple of those Sonos speakers, and the Alexa abilities in it weren't the same as they were on the actual Echo device. And if that's going to continue to be an issue with third-party hardware running the Alexa software, you know, it's kind of a deal killer.
I only use my Sonys really on the plane. It's the only place. Sometimes I'll wear them in the office, but most of the time in the office I have my AirPods in. So I don't know how well something like Alexa is going to work on airplane Wi-Fi. I could definitely see any kind of smarts you can add into the devices would make the device more useful. And I definitely agree with you, Brian, on, you know, just having that there all the time. It's a way for Amazon to get around the whole mobile device thing. Like, we don't have a mobile device, but if we can be embedded into all these other things that you use everywhere, then, you know,
just as good.
Screw having to be on the phone, right?
Right. Just put it in the peripherals.
It makes me wonder how that stuff is going to be worked into the iPhone, because right now we have alternate keyboards finally. I think for like the last two versions or three versions of the OS, you can use different keyboards, and they're finally mature enough to where I use the Google keyboard all the time on my phone. I rarely use the built-in keyboard for anything. It's always, I've got that Gboard is what I use. And that's my input device on the phone, is through Google. But everything else is still, as far as communicating with the device, is still Siri. So is that always locked out? Am I always going to be using Siri on my phone? Or are we going to get a different input device where I could say, I would rather use Alexa on my phone than Siri? I don't see that ever happening. I'm just basically speculating, but they allowed you to replace the keyboard.
Or else you would have to have their Alexa app in the foreground to make it work.
Right.
And that's
right.
What they mentioned in the notes for this too, is right now it's sort of depending on that app to be installed. But I mean, if you think about it, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon all have their digital assistants on the iPhone. They're just not first-class citizens. You can't invoke them by hitting a button. Kind of like Maps, right? You're stuck with using Apple Maps you can fire up anything that you want. If you use a third-party app, like if I use Fantastical, I can say open all directions that are in an invite in Waze if I want to, but you still don't.
Well, it's the same thing with email. I mean, even now, still email. You click on an email link in a browser, and if you don't have Apple Mail installed, it pops up that screen with create an email account. That is so frustrating. I mean, here we are at, 11, right? I'm sorry. We're at iOS 11, and we still can't tell the operating system that my default mail client is Spark, not Mail.
And the Mac is allowed that forever.
Which is something that's existed in, desktop clients since,
forever.
94 or 95, since we had a GUI desktop client with an email client on it.
Well, I mean, email clients existed before they were baked into the OS. Like it was a third party software. I mean, I think a lot of people who are, younger folks who are newer to computers don't realize that, hey, your computer used to just didn't come with email. You had to install the email software, that you wanted to use. I mean, do y'all remember
installing
Trumpet Winsock?
Well, you basically have to.
Yes, Grandpa, and Eudora.
I was going to say, even if you had Windows 95 and you didn't have to install Winsock, it was like you had to sort of bootstrap by using that crippled version of Internet Explorer to put Netscape Navigator on there, and then you would use Netscape Navigator to go download Eudora.
I think the
way back.
I think the big fear here for Apple is that it doesn't want to make it easy for you to migrate away. I think what they don't want to do is, if they let you use the Gmail client as your primary mail client and Google Contacts as your primary contacts and Google Calendar as your primary calendar, on a humbug, you could slip over to Android and have no problem, because those are already your workflow wouldn't change at all. I mean, I don't agree with their philosophy, but I think that's where they're coming from, is that battle to be default is what they're trying to keep a death grip on, so that they don't lose that sort of mind share of, hey, we have services too, and they work, and they work well. Otherwise, it becomes a very slippery platform.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with the email client, though, is with Safari on your phone, I always use Safari. I have Chrome installed, I think, on my iPad. I don't even think I have it installed on my phone. But when you launch something on your phone, Safari opens, and you get to where you want to be, even if you wanted to do it in Chrome. The problem with email is, when you click on something and you want to do something in email, you don't get a default that still works like you would if you wanted to use Chrome, but it opened Safari. With email, you get that stupid, hey, create your email account screen up. And then you're like, damn it, now I got to go copy that, address, and then open up Spark and pay. I mean, it's just, the workflow is broken.
It just sort of craps the bed, right?
Whereas with the browser, at least, if you click on a link, And
a browser's a more passive experience, I think is what you're trying to say. And Chrome still uses the same rendering engine that Safari does on iOS. So there's really not a compelling reason to use it unless you want the same tabs you had in Chrome on your computer or the same browsing history or whatever to still be there, I guess. It would be the only compelling reason to even use Chrome on iOS at all.
It's a broken workflow with email, whereas with the browsers, it at least still does what you wanted to do when you clicked on something.
But if you had these wearables where they're only depending on the LTE connection for the assistant. So that's why I use the over-the-ear headphones with a good microphone as an example. What if all you were really dependent upon was the data connection to the phone and then you didn't need it? So you had a button, you tap on it, or you just invoke the magical command to invoke the assistant and it reduces the phone to sort of a dumb pipe. That's a better situation to be in, I think, for your third-party assistants. Because then you negate the whole thing. You cut the operating system out of the equation, and the fact that you can't be a first-party client becomes sort of a moot point.
It makes sense. I mean, I don't use Siri on my Mac at all. I as the button, it stares at me. I see the little Siri button on my touch bar right now just staring at me, taunting me, going, "Don't you want to click me?"
But do you ever use it at all?
On my Mac. Ever click it on the Mac.
Why don't you just remove it from your touch bar?
I have, but then I think at some point I replace the touch bar with the default set, and so it's back on there now. But I have started to try to use it on my phone more, but I end up going, "Hey lady, hey lady, hey lady," and I say it like four times, and I get pissed, and you know, I pick up my phone and I'm like yelling, you know, like, you know, turn on the GD lights. I actually switched my lights over to my Echo now. I had a couple of Echo plugs that I got, or Echo compatible plugs, and so now all my lights and stuff are set up on the Echo.
So it never occurred to you to raise your wrist and do the same thing?
I've tried it, same thing. It's like it won't answer me. I don't know. Maybe I
mush mouth.
Like three or four voices. Yeah, it's like in the morning I talk like this, and then my lunch I'm like this, and then you know.
Watch is like, what is he talking about? What is he saying over there, Jim? Did you have a stroke? I can't understand you.
It's probably the gummy bears, right?
That's what it is. It's the gummy bears that are causing the problem. Enunciate.
I'm from the South.
Hi, Siri. Turn on my lights.
Yeehaw.
Wow. I think at some point Jim's just going to go, "Spotify, turn on my light." They need to make their own device. I think they do. Actually, you know what? The first thing that I did yesterday in a long time, I was using Waze. I drove downtown, and I've never turned on the Spotify integration inside of Waze until yesterday. And I got to say, that's actually pretty handy because you can switch back and forth between the apps. So if I go into Spotify, Waze has still got like this huge banner at the top that makes it a much easier tap target. So if you have your phone mounted on the dashboard like I do, as one does, if you're inside of Apple Music and you're doing something like with, or not even Apple Music, if you're using Apple Maps as directions and you're in some other app, you get that same sort of banner that's persistent across any other app that you open. But if you go into something like Waze and you're listening to Apple Music, let's say, switching back and forth between the two, not so easy. But if you turn on the integration inside of Waze with Spotify, if I bounce back to Spotify, I still get the very easily tappable Waze stuff at the top of Spotify. So I thought that was when they do things like that, that's a nice reason for keeping them around, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Spotify does so many things better than Apple Music that, you know, it's a hard case. But then for some reason yesterday, like as I'm watching football, I spent all day watching, you know, those two boring football games. Well, I guess the second one did get a little exciting at the end, but I was making an iTunes playlist of like a bunch of like college era bands for me, like 90s stuff, you know, with Pearl Jam and Radiohead and Nirvana and U2. And, you know, I spent all day long making this huge playlist in iTunes. You know, I did it in iTunes because to me, the interface for that on iTunes is so much better than Spotify, but Spotify does so much other things better. Oh, and I can report, when I got back from Christmas, I tested out Spotify devices, like playing to remote devices trick. And I was on the phone with my brother, and I was able to play straight to his Onkyo receiver from my house in Dallas. Like, I basically just, from my phone, said, "Start playing this song." And from devices, his Onkyo was still in the list. I was able to pick it, and the music started playing at his house in Mississippi. The Onkyo wasn't even on. The Onkyo turned on, you know, because it's listening, like, I guess, in the background, you know, on Wi-Fi. So basically, anytime I want now, I can start music playing at his house in Gulfport, you know, 10-hour drive away from here, 8-hour drive away from here, from Dallas. So that was kind of crazy.
You can have it queued up for when you walk in the house. So you're like, hey, brother. And you walk into, like, you know,
the John Cena music. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. Yeah.
Or, you know, spaghetti Western. Good, the bad, and the ugly.
So I don't know. To me, that's a plus and a minus that works.
That's a big minus in my book, because you come over and you let somebody connect up to your system one time, and then all of a sudden they're punking you forever. Now that's not cool. Yeah. You need to be on the same network to be able to. You should be able to make that happen only if you're on the same network or within physical range. That's my take.
I'm gonna kick up some Little John or something for him at like 5 a.m. in the morning sometime.
What? Speaking of music, so it looks like the reports are brewing that Beats co-founder Jimmy Iovine is leaving Apple, reports say, in August of 2018 after his payouts vest from the Beats acquisition in 2014, that he and Eddie Q don't see eye to eye. I think that would be a real loss for Apple.
Tell me if you think I'm wrong, but you had to see this coming. If you've watched
the Defiant Ones,
that show on HBO, The Defiant Ones. I mean, what's the name of the show? The Defiant Ones. I mean, Iovine marches to the beat of his own drummer. I mean, and it's amazing. It's an amazing drummer that he marches to. But he does his own thing. He does it the way he wants. And I could totally see where, within a rigid structure of the way Apple operates, that, you know, he couldn't do, you know, he wouldn't be comfortable in that structure, you know. So, I mean, he's also a brilliant man too. So you're at least going to wait 3 years until all your options vest before you, you know, sail off. So, you know, I mean, he's got a ton of money coming his way. Apple stock is way up over the last 3 years. And, you know, it was a $1 billion+ acquisition to start with. I mean, it makes sense to me. You're right. I think it's a huge loss for Apple, because he's probably a kind of a grounded scent, you know, voice where it comes to Apple Music, and is probably a good voice when Apple is negotiating with all the other, you know, all the music companies. So it's a big loss for them, but it does not surprise me one bit.
Well, he's kind of the guy that was always, he was the one who made the decision, and that was the decision that stuck, you know, when he was running Interscope Records. And then when he came on with Apple, he had to sort of be a team player. And I'm not saying that that's why he's leaving, but he's not 100% in control of his own destiny when it comes to the Beats and the Apple Music service.
Yeah, he runs his own show. I mean, he didn't even have I read the article. I mean, he didn't even really have a title at Apple, which, I mean, come on, give the man a title, you know, like King Iovine or something. I don't know. Crown Prince Iovine.
Have to wonder why they didn't just give him more leeway to do what he needed to do, if these reports are to be believed.
What's funny, though, is that he was one of the first ones that identified streaming as, you know, an option and started up the Beats Music service and all that stuff. And now he's on the opposite end of the spectrum, where he says he doesn't see where streaming is a viable, like, something's got to change for streaming to be a viable company moneymaker. I think it's got to be, I think from his point of view, Apple probably has it right, though, that it's a service for Apple and then they can use it to sell their phones. Whereas standalone for Spotify, you know, they're going to be in rough shape trying to do it on their own without being tied into another device. But I will say that all the millennials I work with, I don't think any of them are Apple Music users. Every single one of them use Spotify.
Well,
Everyone.
Just as you said a couple of minutes ago, I mean, Spotify is doing a lot of things better than Apple Music is doing.
Spotify also had a student rate that was roughly half price, and I think they still do if you have a valid
EDU
email address.
Well, not just an email address. I can tell you as a fact, as someone who actually did that when I was taking online courses, like, I can get in on the student rate. I qualified. They check that very frequently. So it's not like you get in on it forever and you pay a lifetime of $5. No. They will kick you off when the term is up. But that's a good way to get people hooked.
Yeah, no, they
When do you graduate? You're cut off.
But I mean, every single one of them, I was shocked by that. I haven't worked with, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I haven't worked with this many younger folks. With CGI, my previous employer, you know, my teams were a little bit older, but with this new company, we have 10 or 15 new hires come in every single summer with this college program, and they get placed all over the company. So, you know, we've got some mid,
you know, a bunch of mid-20-somethings floating around in the company, and every single one of them is Spotify. If you walk around the office, you know, that's what they're running. I mean, none of them are...
Well, they also have a free tier, too. So, again, you have people that, you know, may not have had a lot of disposable income.
And they just deal with the commercials.
And they deal with the commercials and things like that. So, it would be interesting to see how many of them are paying customers.
Ugh.
No, I mean, exactly. Ugh. But you think about it. They have 70 million, roughly, Spotify does. Apple, in, you know, just like 2 or 3 years' time, has gone to 30 million. So they've gotten half of what Spotify has. And Spotify has been around for well over twice as long as Apple Music. So it is impressive what Apple Music has gone through. And again, going back to the power of default, there is something really nice about being able to invoke Siri and say, play a song or play a playlist, and it just does it. And you're not going to get that integration on an iPhone with Spotify. And that'll be, I think, long-term, that's going to be more transformative for folks as people become more entrenched with their digital assistants. Now, if Siri doesn't take off, if the HomePod doesn't take off, maybe that's not a big deal. But I think the introduction of HomePod may sort of shift things in their favor with the integration with Apple Music. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, I saw my brother do that several times in the truck over Christmas where, you know, just like play this song or play that song from Siri.
I do that all the time when I drive. If I want to listen to music, it's much easier to not have to take my eyes off the road, hit the Siri button on my steering wheel, and just tell it to play this playlist or play this song without having to futz around with the phone while I'm driving. I love that. Honestly, it's great.
I don't think it could hear me in my car. You know, it's revving up too much.
Hey, lady.
Oh, shift, shift, shift.
It apparently can't hear Jim even when it's pitch quiet. Even when it's
pitch not, quiet.
Even when it's completely quiet. So I don't know. You may be right on that one. Well, I think that's all that I had for this week. Still kind of a slow week. It'll be interesting to see what happens at CES this week. We can definitely talk about that next time. See what gets announced and see what's on its way. Do you guys have anything before we're done?
I think that's about it for me this week. It's been a football-laden couple of weeks for me, all the bowl games, and then I watched the two NFL games yesterday, and we're recording on Sunday morning, so I got two more NFL games today, including my Saints, and in a couple of weeks, I'll be moving. I get to move up two floors. I'm not leaving the building, but they want to renovate my apartment, so I get to move up two floors to an already renovated unit, the same as mine, so I'll be starting that hall, which is going to be a royal pain in the you-know-what, so... Yeah, that's what's going on in my world.
Moving on up.
To the east side. To a deluxe apartment in the Sky II.
I'm on the northwest side of the building, so.
Well, you're moving on up. You finally got a piece.
The deluxe apartment.
You finally got a piece of the pie.
And none of our younger listeners get any of that.
Nope. And we're old.
Well, if they had TV Land or Nick at Night, they might know.
Is I Nick made a Night reference still to a thing? Like Arnold Ziffel this week. And
No one
watched Green Acres.
That is so sad, Mr. Haney. All right, well, that does it for this week. Talk to you guys next week. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at INFIN loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at BRIANB. Jim is at Big Jim, that's at BIGJIM. Jason is at JSNYNG, that's at JSNYNG. And Brad is at Meester Idol, that's at MEESTERIDLE. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.